So what I'd like to do this morning, my understanding is that you're a group who love to talk, and I think over breakfast I saw that happening, so I'm trusting that is true. So in a minute, I'm going to read a little story from the Bible. I'm going to read it a couple of times, and I'm going to ask you in little groups to identify what the biggest surprise for you is and the biggest question you have, all right? The surprise in the story and the question you have about the story. And if you've been around church for a little while, you might be familiar with the story. So I want to want you to come to it with really fresh eyes, and then we'll explore it together. And what I'm hoping and expecting is, if you're someone who would say you're a Christian, you're trusting Jesus, you're leaning your life into him, then you'll find some great stuff for you. You'll learn something. If you're not yet a Christian, you're exploring or wondering, or actually everyone else in the room would say, yeah, they are definitely a Christian, because you wear all the right stuff on the outside. I remember once when I was 11 years old, I got invited to play cricket at the Oval. And if you know like the Oval, that's a big, you know, I'm going to play cricket, London Oval. This is a big international stadium. But it was only because they had run out of players and they needed someone else. And I said, I've never, ever played cricket. I can't. And they said to me, all you need to do is wear the whites, you know, and no one will know. And I walked on to the middle of the Oval wearing all the whites with no idea of which end of the wicket I was meant to stand or anything. But everyone's like, he's a cricketer because he's wearing all the stuff. You can actually do that with church. And people say, they're a Christian because you're wearing all the stuff, you know. So I don't want to make the assumption, just be very honest with yourself right now. Like, some of us probably aren't yet leaning our weight into Jesus fully, but no one else knows except us, because we've got it all right on the outside. So there could well be something for you if you're not yet a Christian. And particularly I want you to think, what about someone you'll meet this week? Because I do believe God speaks through the Bible. He speaks to us, but he also speaks through us. So I think you might hear something, discover something as we look at this story that might not be for you, but you know it is for someone you're going to see at the school gate or your neighbor, or you can send a little message and say, I was in church and there was this and I just thought it would be really good for you to hear it. Does that make sense? So could we listen with ears, our own ears for us, and also thinking like this might get passed on. So if you've got your phone there or a Bible, if you haven't, I'm going to read it. If you've got a phone or a Bible or something, would you look up John chapter 2, sentences 1 to 11? So you can just Google John 2 and sentences or verses 1 to 11. I say sentences because even now, when I first became a Christian, someone said, oh, Alex, we're going to read from verse 17. And I was like, oh, my goodness, they want me to sing. And I was slightly terrified. So I say, and if you've heard me sing, then you'll understand. I was terrified with good cause. Anyway, so John 2, 1 to 11. And this is a story of Jesus turning water into wine. Now, for me to get my Bible, I need to dismantle your technology there, because someone's nicked my Bible and used it as a prop. So can I get it back? Thank you very much. I don't know if that's going to break anything. Yeah, I'm happy with the handheld, yeah. There we go. So, this is what it says. So, I'm going to read it two or three times, and then we'll think about what's the surprise and what's the question. So try and imagine it for the very first time, even if you're familiar with it. This is what it says. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 80 to 120 liters. Jesus said to his servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then they called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the servants, after the guests had had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now. Where what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So I'm going to read it again. And if you're really super familiar with it, try and erase it from your mind, try and imagine being there. What's the big surprise? Think about if you were Jesus' mother. Is there anything that would surprise you about the way Jesus spoke to you? Woman! I think my mama, boom! Get back in the box, Alex. Yeah? Or imagine you're the groom. And the master of the ceremony comes up to you and goes, well done, you've saved the best wine till last. Have I? Like, what are the surprises? And there's a lot more. And what's your big question? Let me read it again, all right? And then in groups, what really surprises you? And what's your big question? On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 80 to 120 liters of water. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheapest wine, after the guests have had too much to drink. But you've saved the best till now. What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Right. So 5 minutes or so, threes or fours, where you're sitting with someone. What's your big surprise? What makes you go, that is really surprising? And what question do you have about this episode, this story? Off you go. 5 minutes of chatting. Ladies and gents, could I just interrupt just for a second? If you're just waiting to speak out the most profound truth you've ever realized, you'll get your chance. Don't worry. We'll carry on the conversations. What we're going to do in a minute or so, though, is I'm going to ask some groups to tell us what their big surprise or their big question was, and we'll see how that helps us understand this passage and hear what God is saying to us from it, either for us or for that person we're going to talk to in the week in some way. So I want to give you the heads up that I might call on your group to kind of say, here's one or two surprises that we talked about. Here's one or two questions. Keeps you on your toes, because I'm not going to tell you which groups I'm going to call on, but it could be any of you. So you've got a couple more minutes. So you've got two more minutes or so, and then I'm just going to call on random groups, your big surprise and your big question. Cool. Off you go. Ladies and gents, I'll call us back together. Just before I ask a few of you for surprises and questions, then we'll just reflect on what that teaches us. Look, we have something amazing here. So, ladies, could you just each introduce yourself? Just tell us your names.
Bella.
Bella's in a brand new dress, by the way, this morning, looking very nice. And your name?
Royal,
excellent.
Daisy.
Lois, and last but not least, obviously,
Tanya,
very good. And have you got Al You Need to Know? I like that jumper. That is very clever, isn't it? Now, you've got something cool to show us. So
basically, what do we do first of all? What's the
And then what do? They served it to the chief, and what God done?
He threw the water in his wine.
So there again, you put the water in.
Woo! Look at that. Well done. That is brilliant. Tell us some of the emotions you felt when you saw that happen.
Amazed.
You were amazed?
Shocked.
Any other emotions you felt? What were your feelings doing when you saw it happen?
Surprised.
Just like the guys in the story, wasn't it like that? Super duper. Should we give them a round of applause as they head back to their seats? You can go back, go sit down again. Now, let's hear some of the questions or surprises. I'm going to go to two or three groups, slightly at random. Start with you guys. What were your surprises or questions? Who wants to tell us?
You can take the microphone, that's fine.
How did he turn the water into wine?
Excellent. How? Great question.
I just wanted to know whether she was wearing a pretty dress or not when she got married.
Whether she was wearing a pretty dress
or not?
Thanks, Dan.
What surprises are we?
The way he talked to his mother.
The way he talked to his mother? What would your mum say if he spoke to you like that? Who's your mum? Over there. What would happen? Trouble. Yeah. That's really good. We're going to come back to a couple of them in a minute. That is really good. How about we go? Can we go to you guys at the front here as well? Who's spokesy? Tell us, question or surprise?
Why wine?
Why wine? Very good. Oh, lots of agreement over there about why wine. Fantastic. Let's do one. Anyone particularly want to share their question or surprise? Yeah, please.
Well, good morning, everybody. Well, you see, this question of water on into wine. Maybe they didn't realise it was wine in the jug. Maybe somebody had put that in there thinking, oh, it's still water. Then they served it out. Oh, this is nice flavour, isn't it? Oh, it must be special if it's wine. Oh, it's not water. This is wine. Oh, that's nice. Let's celebrate with a drop of wine. Wow. Yes, it's wine.
That's brilliant. Absolutely. It's a shocking story, isn't it? Now, let's see if I can just reflect a bit on a couple of those questions. So one of the questions was about how he spoke to his mother. And it is a surprise, isn't it? So Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. It's a loaded question, isn't it? And he replies, woman, why do you involve me? And he does actually talk to his mum. It's not rude in the original language, but it's not how you talk to your mother. It's kind of like the standard way you talk to any woman. We don't really have an English word that's quite the equivalent. So it's not profoundly disrespectful if it was to any other woman, but to your mum in public, it's you're kind of saying you're not my mum. Does that make sense? You're just saying you're just another woman. Now, what actually I think is going on there is repeatedly through John's account of Jesus's life, Jesus says that he is an obedient son, but who's the obedient son to? His Father in heaven. So, for example, in John chapter 8, for example, he says, I only do what I see my Father in heaven doing. I only say what I hear my Father in heaven saying. I'm being obedient to my Father in heaven. So he's kind of making a point here, not being disrespectful to his mother, but saying my obedience is to my Father. Does that make sense in the whole story of what John is doing? I don't think as children we're meant to emulate Jesus in this way at this moment. You're absolutely right. Don't talk to your mother like that. Call her Mummykins. I think she'd appreciate that wonderfully. What else did we hear? Oh, now why the wine? Now this is a good question. Now we can get a bit hooked up on the wine. Particularly if you're like a traditional Baptist for a long time, there's a bit of a history of being teetotal. And so the alcohol in the wine can make us feel a bit awkward. It's worth reflecting. Wine in Jesus' day was very low alcohol, mostly to kill off the bacteria and the like that would be in the water. It was safer to drink than the water. However, in the story, clearly they do drink enough of it to get a bit tipsy, don't they? Because they say normally, you know, and we can't deny that, even if it makes us feel a bit uncomfortable. But why the wine is really significant. Because all the way through the Old Testament, the old part of the Bible, God gives the promise that we will know when his Savior has come, because that person will bring vast quantities of delicious wine. Now, if you're like me, you know that if you want high quality wine, you get it in small amounts, don't you? And if you want large quantities of alcohol, it's really cheap, isn't it? As I say, the average age around us is 22 years old. If you want to live somewhere where you see vast quantities of cheap alcohol, come live where we live every Friday and Saturday night. Yeah, the Wetherspoons. I hope no one works for Wetherspoons. Shh, don't say that. Anyway, a number of years ago, Hannah and I lived in Hong Kong. We went to the Hong Kong Yacht Club for a wine tasting evening. And these bottles of wine, each bottle cost over £1,000. And when they gave us some, do you know how much they gave us to drink, to taste? About that much, tiny amount. Because you never get high quality in vast quantity, do you? And so God in the Old Testament says, but so you will know that I've come to save you, my Savior has arrived, they will come both with vast quantity and amazing quality. So, for example, Isaiah 25, about 1,000 years before Jesus. On this mountain, when the Lord Almighty comes, he will prepare a feast of rich foods, a banquet of aged wine, the best meats and the finest wines, more than anyone can drink. Do you see what God is saying? Or Jeremiah 31, about 800 years earlier, verse 12. They will come and shout for joy in the heights of Zion. They'll rejoice in the bounty of the Lord, the grain, the new wine, and the oil. A bounty of new wine. Does that make sense? Or Amos 9, verse 13. The days are coming, declares the Lord, where I will come and save, and you will know I have arrived, because new wine will drip from the mountains and flow from the hills. So do you see what Jesus is doing here? He's not just rescuing someone's embarrassment at a wedding that's run out of wine. He is proving that he is God's rescuer and savior. Does that make sense? By bringing the hallmark that God had promised. Can I pick up on one last surprise that we had? I think it was, how did he do it? That was your question, wasn't it? How did he do this? How did he make the wine from water? Anne did it, but we could reveal the secret. Would you like me to reveal the secret? It's okay. I don't know for certain, but I think what Anne did is at the bottom of the jug, there was just a drop or two of red food colouring. So it went in as water and came out red coloured. Is that right? So Anne is an amazing magician, but not a miracle worker, just to be clear. I mean, we'll wait and see, Anne. Yeah. I think the answer of how did Jesus do this is proof that he is the creator God. He did it because he is the creator God. He made something kind of from nothing. But there's more evidence of that. Because one of my surprises in the story was, why did they tell us the day of the week it happened? Did you hear that right at the beginning? On the third day. Now, if we counted the days in these first couple of chapters, then what we would find is in chapter 1, verse 21, count the days with me, it starts the next day. So there's been one day and then the next day, hasn't there? And then in chapter 1, sentence 35, it says, and the next day. And then in chapter 1, verse 43, it says, and then the next day. And then it says, on the third day, or 3 days later, 1, 2, 3. What day of the week is it? Seventh day. If you know John's account, how does it begin right at the beginning, the very first sentences of John's account? It's the confusing bit that no one ever wants to read at the Christmas service. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made. It's a story of things being created. Does anyone else know a story in the Bible that is about creation, that takes place over 7 days, and on the last day has a wedding? Genesis, chapter 1 and 2, isn't it? And we know the name of the couple in Genesis. What are the couple who get married in Genesis called? You're on fire. Adam and Eve. Do you see what Jesus is doing here? He's recreating the creation story, ending it on a wedding, to show that he is the creator God. And so the answer to the question of how did he do it is not because he's a clever trickster, but because he's God himself in the world come to do that. So, some surprises and some questions. There's a ton more, but I promised Anne would finish at 5:30. But there's a whole bunch more. A whole bunch more about the groom and why Jesus kept it quiet and all sorts of things, all showing who Jesus is. What I'd like us to do for the last 2 minutes in groups, if it's all right, is to share, if you will, in threes and fours, one thing you've learnt, either from each other or from listening to me. So one thing you've learnt yourself, and something this week you think you could communicate to someone else who might help them. At school, at work, where you live, a family member. So one thing you've learnt, and one thing you'd love to pass on. Because we don't come to church just for ourselves, because it is more blessed to give than receive, isn't it? So one thing you've learnt, and one thing you could pass on to someone else from anything that's happened this morning. You've got about 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll wrap up and stay around for more chat. Okay? 2 or 3 more minutes. Off you go. One thing you've learned, one thing to pass on. Well, I apologize for interrupting discussions again. It is so, so, so good to talk like this and learn together, isn't it? And my understanding, you'll know better than me, but my understanding is there's no reason to rush away, stay and keep talking, just hang out for a little bit longer. I'm going to pray for us. And I'm going to pray 2 things straight from this story, actually. I don't know if you noticed the last sentence I read. It says, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs. There's lots of other signs, these miracles he does. This was the first one. And because it's the first or the prototype one, we're told why he does them. So later on, all the other miracles he does, we know why he does them. So the first, why does he do signs? This was the first he did. It says, through which he revealed his glory, and people believed in him, or his disciples believed in him. When Jesus does things like this, he does it, one, to reveal his glory. The word glory means what is most spectacular or wonderful about someone put on public display. So if you watch the Oscars nominations, they stand at the front with an envelope, don't they? And they rip the envelope open and read out a name. What was wonderful about someone is hidden until the moment it's made public. Their glory is put on display. Does that make sense? Or many years ago, I was very cultured. I was actually dating my wife, hoping, you know, she'd think this guy is worth marrying. So bringing my A game. And I took her to an art gallery. and just revealed my incompetence mostly. But we stood in front of this piece of art done by a famous artist, and it was covered by a velvet curtain. Have you ever had that experience? And there was this dignitary, Prince Anne, in fact, was there. She was holding the gold tassel, and someone said intelligent words, and I made kind of like, with no idea what he was talking about. And then Prince Anne opened these velvet curtains and revealed this picture. And everyone around me was like, oh, wow, so amazing. Yeah, that artist's glory, his brilliance, was put on display in that moment. That's what glory means. Does that make sense? So Jesus here does these things to show us how amazing he is, to make it publicly known. And what's our response? So we might believe in him. Or actually, in the original, keep believing in him. Not just start, but keep believing in him. So I'm going to pray that we might see Jesus more and we might trust him more as well. And just before I pray, I want to invite you to inside your own heads. In what way are you not seeing Jesus and would like to? And where in your life is it hard to believe in Jesus? What relationship or financial problem or situation or health challenge is it hard to believe in Jesus? So this is not an empty blessing. It's a weighty blessing that we might see him where we can't and we might trust him where it's hard.